from the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. In July, a faction of the Turkish armed forces tried to overthrow the country's government, but failed to do so. When all was said and done, more than 300 people were killed and thousands more injured. But it's what's happened after the coup attempt that has made many people worried. Forces loyal to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan have carried out mass arrests, detaining at least 6,000 people, most of them being soldiers and judges. All told, more than 67,000 people have been fired, suspended from their jobs, or detained. In addition to that, Erdogan has been on the warpath against critics, shutting down universities, charities, TV and radio stations, newspapers, and even 35 medical institutions. President Erdogan has claimed that all of those arrested were sympathetic to Fethullah Gulen, an imam living in the U.S. who he accuses of trying to help overthrow his democratically elected government. On this edition of Global Journalist, we'll look at the future of Turkey and the so-called purge that's taking place there. In a few minutes, we'll hear from, among other people, a spokesman for President Erdogan's ruling AK Party. But first, we're joined by Andrew Finkel, a freelance journalist and co-founder of the P24, and a platform to support independent Turkish media. His writing has appeared in Foreign Affairs and The Guardian, as well as numerous Turkish publications. Andrew, welcome to Global Journalist.
Hello.
Remind us, if you would, just briefly about this coup attempt in July. What happened and how was it put down?
Well, it was in the evening of July 15th. I mean, the house where I'm sitting now, the window shook as planes flew low over the city of Istanbul, sonic boom breaking windows. Essentially, it was, as you say, a faction within the military. This faction, the government says, had strong allegiances to a preacher who lives in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, of all places, called Fethullah Gulen. There was clearly tanks on the streets. There was an attempt to take over the government. This was successfully put down by really two means. One is that the government used social media much more cleverly than the coup plotters. The president managed to get his message out to his supporters. People came out onto the streets and essentially challenged the tanks and the soldiers and said, you know, why are you doing this? And in a sense, it was the courage of those people which ensured that the coup failed.
Now, and just looking back on modern Turkish history, the military trying to take power is not a completely new phenomenon in Turkey, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, this is, there have been three military coups. People speak of an attempt by the military to unseat a coalition in the 1990s as a postmodern coup, a fourth coup. There was a further attempt in the 2000s to prevent the election of a particular president, which was not successful. Now, I think we all sort of assume that the day of the military coup was over. You can't seize a radio station anymore and hope to control a country. Turkey is a part of a global economy. Any successful coup would have really interrupted the flow of funds and development, and the country would have paid a huge and unsupportable price for a military coup. So we thought, we're of the opinion that no such coup could ever happen again. But of course, it did happen, and now we're dealing with the consequences.
And remind us, if you would, about sort of the general political atmosphere in Turkey over the past couple of years. Many of our listeners may recall these huge protests in Gezi Park back in 2013. There has been conflict with the Kurds and a number of big terrorist attacks in Ankara and, of course, at the Istanbul airport. What's the overall atmosphere been like in advance of this coup?
Well, Turkey has serious problems, some of which you've just listed. And many of the commentators regard this, the attempt to occupy a park, an environmental protest, as it were, in 2013, as the beginning of a deterioration in civil liberties in Turkey and a move really towards a much more authoritarian government. The government called that attempt, which was really just a sort of protest movement, they typified that as the coup at the time. Subsequently, there was an attempt, we believe, by the Gulenist movement to have massive revelations of fraud and peculation and corruption. Tapes were produced, and the government, too, identified that as a coup. And so in 2013, we began to see a much more authoritarian, I suppose, government in Turkey. The newspapers were shut down, newspapers were interfered with, journalists were being fired. There was clearly much more active interference in the civil society life and in organizations in Turkey.
And you mentioned this Gulenist movement, Fethullah Gulen, you said, was in Pennsylvania. He's in exile in the U.S. Tell us just a bit about sort of what his movement represents and what evidence is there that him or his followers were behind this?
Well, Fethullah Gulen is the leader of a branch of Islamists. Of us thought of this as a fairly moderate form of Islam. He was a proponent of dialogue and of discussion and had a great following within Turkey itself. Now, you know, part of his strategy clearly was to get his supporters in positions of power and authority and to use those positions to his advantage. And of course, you have to remember that he was a key ally of this current government. Mr. Erdogan, you know, played along with the Gulen movement for a very long time. So when the two quarreled, when the two split, it was very much, you know, a falling out among friends as opposed to a movement which had always opposed the Erdogan government. This government thought it was time to get the Gulen movement under control. The Gulen movement didn't want to get under control, and there was a series of frictions. Now, the fact that they were so engaged in government that they could actually plot a military coup, I have to say we're still waiting to see some of the evidence that this was the case. The government has maintained and made volubly and forcibly that the Gulenist movement were the sole people behind this coup. But we're still waiting to see exactly how they manipulated their positions within power.
And our time does grow short, but I wanted to ask you about the general atmosphere right now. In the introduction, I talked about sort of the scale of the purge that's going on right now. I believe it's something like 9,000 police have been suspended, 1,700 soldiers have been fired, more than 40,000 teachers and 2,700 judges. A number of media outlets have been shut down. What's the overall atmosphere when you see people and talk to them on the street or in a cafe?
Well, I think there's obviously two sorts of people, those who have been the victims of the purge and those who are not. I mean, to some extent, people are relieved to see that life has gone back to normal, and there have been pro-government rallies and demonstrations in the 2 weeks following the coup. But of course, I think the question some people are asking is, you know, who's minding the store? Conventional wisdom has it that countries need armies, countries need functioning universities, countries need all these institutions which appear to be being systematically dismantled. So I think there's going to be a price for this failed coup, even though it was a failed coup, and thankfully it was a failed coup, which Turkey has not yet complicated. I think to sum up the situation very briefly, Mr. Erdogan's, the president's position is much stronger now. His power is greater. He's got a lot of support within the country. But the country over which he rules has been weakened and damaged in ways that we haven't yet quite figured out.
Andrew Finkel, thanks for joining us on Global Journalist. A reminder, I'm Jason McClure. Today we're revisiting July's failed coup d'etat in Turkey and the aftermath in which thousands of people have been fired, suspended, or arrested. Joining us now from the Turkish capital, Ankara, Harun Armagan, a spokesman for President Erdogan's ruling AK Party. From Washington, D.C., Aykan Erdemir. He was a former opposition member of the center-left CHP party. Now he's a senior fellow with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Also in D.C., Ilhan Tanir, a reporter for the Turkish online news portal Haberdar. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Let me start with you, Harun Armagan. Tell us just a bit about your perspective on the coup. Did this catch you by surprise?
Of course, it was a huge shocking thing that to see that the army coup attempt is still happening in Turkey. Yes, Turkey had army coup attempts in the history, but in the last 20 years, Turkey is showing a quite mature democracy performance. And we have elections and we have fair elections with high participation and very high representation, one of the highest in Europe. And people's belief in democracy has been stronger and stronger, and democratic achievements have been successfully done in Turkey, and there was no expectation for such an army coup. And everyone, of course, was shocked. And at the same day that I was actually passing the bridge, when I saw the army officers on the bridge, I just thought it might be an extra terrorist attack alarm. And that's why there is extra power here. But I was not thinking any army coup attempt at all.
And Aykan Erdemir in Washington, let me turn it to you. There have been a number of news reports saying that there's this widespread belief in Turkey that the United States government was behind this coup. Do we know, is there any evidence for that, or why does this seem to be circulating?
Unfortunately, in some of the pro-government media, we have seen baseless reports and accusations. And these accusations are so far-fetched as to point to, for example, some of the Turkey analysts in Washington, D.C.'s think tank scene and university scene as the plotters behind the coup. There's absolutely no concrete evidence. This seems more like a smear campaign, character assassination. And the sad thing is, this is not only misinformation and disinformation, but this also draws the attention from the real coup plotters, meaning the real forces behind the coup, and it kind of obscures the facts and the evidence.
And Ilhan Tanir, Turkey has been a very politically polarized country for the past few years. Tell us, why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say one word about Mr. Erman's statement about the current state of democracy in Turkey. It is really hard to argue that Turkey has a healthy democracy. Turkey's democratic standards have been sliding back. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can take a look at any international index, whether democracy, whether freedom of press, transparency, corruption, every single index, Turkey has been sliding back. And OSCE report on November 1st election has real troubles and statements regarding fairness of the election. About the polarization of Turkey, it is correct. Since 2013 Gezi protests, Turkey unfortunately has been polarized. And as a President Erdogan, who has been ruling the country, apparently I think the one that needs to be held accountable for that. Most of the segments of the country have been waiting some kind of reach out from the president, but mostly President Erdogan's and his administration's rhetoric, policies, whether inside or outside of the country, unfortunately helped polarize the country.
Well, let me turn that to you, Harun Armagan, because Ilhan Tanir does reference a number of indexes done by think tanks and universities and other places that show that there has been a retrenchment of democracy in Turkey. We've even seen the U.S. and the European Union criticizing the response to this coup attempt, urging President Erdogan's government to respect the rule of law. What do you say to that?
I completely disagree, factually disagree with Ilhan, of course, but also I think that it's disrespect to people who lost their life for democracy. When the coup attempt was going on, the people went on streets from every political opinion, every ethnic background, every religious faith group. They went out and stand again armlessly against army coup attempters, coup plotters. So those people were not there to protect President Erdogan. Those people were there to protect their democracy. I think what Ilhan is saying is disrespect to these people who lost their life for democracy. They wanted to keep democracy. And one more thing that Ilhan and Andrei Finkel are also missing, that first time in recent history that we had a rally, all political parties were there. Nationalist HDP, Nationalist MHP, the Republican Party was there, ruling AK Party was there, and President Erdogan was there. Over 5 million people from different ethnic backgrounds, from different religious faith groups, different political opinions, made a rally to support democracy in Turkey. We haven't seen that picture before. And even HDP leaders were not there. HDP supporters were there as well. So it was a unique unity message. And it was not only in Istanbul, it was in 81 cities of Turkey. And yes, President Erdogan indicated that this is a time that we should all use this chance to bring Turkey together again. And there was like groups between the groups that they don't have strong communication previously, they started communicating better after this coup attempt, because the stand that people has showed, the strength that they showed for democracy was incredible. And I think it's an inspirational day for Turkey and other countries.
Well, I want to come back to these huge pro-government protests that took place in the aftermath of the coup. But first, let me, and Ilhan Tanir, we'll give you a chance to respond. But Aykan Erdemir, I wanted to ask you about what's happening right now. The government has really pushed back on this idea that what it's doing right now is a witch hunt in Turkey. I did see news recently that Turkey was planning to release 38,000 convicted criminals from its prison to clear up rooms, from its prisons to clear up rooms for people who are essentially being arrested in this crackdown. So how do you see things?
Now, first of all, of course, all Turkish citizens expect the Turkish government to go after all coup plotters, no matter who they are. And the opposition is fully behind going after the coup plotters, because the opposition parties know that from 2002 to 2013, there were 11 years of coalition between the Gulen movement and the ruling AKP. Now, of course, going after the coup plotters does not mean a witch hunt. In fact, the opposition is also very careful to make sure that innocent individuals are not brought into this case, because that not only obscures the case, but as we have seen with earlier show trials, it leads to the culprits, the real culprits, walking free. And this has happened with the Ergenekon and Balyoz show trials before. So I think it's very important that Turkey sticks to the rule of law and due process in going after coup plotters, while making sure that we do not repeat the mistakes that we have seen in the first month, because we have had labor union leaders, we have had socialists, we have had dissident academics, people who had nothing to do with the coup, and people who had absolutely no connection to the Gulen community. So I think the government should make sure that this is not a moment to settle scores and going after dissidents, but this is a moment to go after all the coup plotters, no matter how close it hits at home in the ruling AKP.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at how Turkey is faring after a failed coup attempt and accusations of a so-called purge of perceived political enemies. Our guest this week from Ankara, Harun Armagan, a spokesman for President Erdogan's ruling AK Party. From Washington, D.C., Aykan Erdemir. He was a former opposition member in the Turkish parliament. Also from Washington, Ilhan Tanir, a reporter for the Turkish online news site Haberdar. If you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read our ongoing series of interviews with journalists in exile around the world and coverage of foreign affairs and press freedom issues. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at GlobalJourn. Ilhan Tanir, you work for a news outlet, Haberdar, that has been blocked inside Turkey since the coup attempt. A number of other media outlets have been closed down. What is the situation right now for journalists working in Turkey or covering political issues in Turkey?
Sure. Thank you for asking. I just want to add one sentence about Mr. Erdogan's statements. My own family and relatives and friends went out and stayed out streets as anti-coup demonstrations. So pointing out shortcomings of the democracy, I'm not sure what it has to do with disrespecting the anti-coup protesters, which I just stated. My family, including my nephews, nieces, and sisters and brothers were there. There are indexes out there. You can take a look. There is an OSC report I just cited. You can take a look, and you can do your own evaluation about the state of democracy in Turkey, which is a very sad story.
But what about the case of the media?
Yes, sure. Media. I'll just give you Haberdar, example of Haberdar. Three of the editors of Haberdar were detained. One of them, Ahmet Memiş, is still under arrest. It has been 3 weeks or a month almost. And we have no idea why he's been accused of, because most of the detainees are not allowed to speak to their lawyers or see their lawyers. And the same outlet, Haberdar, two of the editors right now are on the detainment list, and they have no idea why they are being sought. And this is just the one story of one news portal in Turkey. As we all know, on July 27th, by a decree issued by President Erdogan, over 130 media organizations were banned. Just 2 days ago, pro-Kurdish newspaper, which has nothing to do with Gulen movement, effectively banned. Their building was sealed. 14 journalists are arrested right now in Turkey. About 100 journalists in jail, and dozens of other journalists are on detainment list, and most of them have no idea why and for what they have been accused of, because there is no evidence being showed whether they have any kind of evidence that can tie them to coup. But
let me just stop you there, because I do want to ask Karun Armagan to address these points. There is this criticism that the government is sort of massively overreacting to this coup attempt and not going after just the coup plotters, but broadly people who are viewed as its political opponents.
No, that's not right. First of all, let me come back to Ilhan's point that the newspaper is not closed just because it has relations with Fethullah Gulen, but it is closed because it has relationships and it makes propaganda of a terrorist organization, PKK. I think you would agree that the PKK is a terrorist organization internationally recognized, NATO recognized, and incitement terror is crime in any democracy. If American listeners now listening, if you would have a journalist in United States and that journalist was making propaganda of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and when promoting young trying to radicalize young people to fight for radicalism and extremism, what would United States judiciary take action about it?
But what about idea that the government is overreacting? I mean, 40,000 school teachers have been suspended. Is it our second and third grade teachers in the countryside? Are they really a threat to the government?
Jason, we have very clear, very clear point on this. Whoever involves in which way to these coup plotters and to the group that actually supported this coup plotter, behind this coup plotter, organized coup plotters, will be going into judiciary and will bring into justice. We have a judiciary system. We have checks and balances of our system. If someone disagrees with their court decision, and they can go to the Supreme Court and they can go to European Human Rights Constitution. So we are an open country. We are open. We are transparent with our judiciary. It will be the same with this Gulenist or with this coup plotters. So people who are arrested or detained for the investigation, if they have no evidence that they supported this coup, they are involved, they will be released. And many people are released. But the ones who support financially, the ones who support organizingly, trying to organize these coup plotters, are going to be investigated and prosecuted because they caused a tragedy to Turkey. They attacked Turkish democracy.
Well, let me turn this to Aykan Erdemir, and I want to change the subject just a little bit to Turkey's foreign relations, because since the coup, President Erdogan has gone to Moscow to meet with Vladimir Putin. Of course, relations between Russia and Turkey had been poor since Turkey shot down a Russian jet during the past year. And then Iran's foreign minister also came to Turkey. So what do you make of this tilt towards Russia and Iran since the coup?
Actually, these moves preceded the coup plot, because in June, Turkey was already trying to reset its bankrupt foreign policy. Turkey used to cherish its own isolation as precious isolation or precious loneliness. But I think by June 2016, the Turkish government realized that this was not sustainable. So they started a concrete normalization process with Russia and also with Israel. So Turkey was trying to make a U-turn. Erdogan was trying to make a U-turn from Turkey's ongoing isolation. And the coup, I think, speeded things up. That is, Turkey turned stronger toward Russia and also toward Iran, And of course, here there is also
a large shift, because in Syria, Russia and Iran have been quite close with President Assad, and Turkey, of course, has been very much opposed to Assad and made overthrowing him a priority. So, what common ground is there?
There will be strong disagreements between Turkey and Russia on the question of Syria, on the question of the future of Kurds, on the question of Islamist terror. But when it comes to economy, I think President Putin is very pragmatic. He has already received enormous concessions from the Turkish side vis-a-vis the Russian nuclear plant built in Turkey. He will get favorable trade terms. He will get a Turkish Stream, a new pipeline to Turkey, and then on to Europe. So I think President Putin is very keen in seeing that this is a vulnerable moment for President Erdogan, and he will make sure to get the most concessions out of Turkey as possible in this.
Let me turn this to Ilhan Tanir then, because I want to talk just briefly about relations with the U.S. Turkey has asked for Fethullah Gulen to be extradited to Turkey to face trial. The U.S. and the European Union have been fairly pointed in their criticism of what's happening now. What do you see the trajectory of the relations between the two countries being?
I think the relations are the lowest point. And I think that the rhetoric coming from Ankara is not helping. I do understand that Turkish administration officials are very angry that they cannot get the extradition of Fethullah Gulen, which most of Turkey believe that he is the behind of the coup, but U.S. administration officials have been clearly stating that there is no hard evidence they have seen so far. So this is going to be a long extradition process, and I think Ankara is going to be even more angrier when they see that.
But let me give the last word here to Harun Armagan with just about 30 seconds left then. Tell us about the relations with the U.S. now. Are they on a bad trajectory?
We always had good relations, strong relations with United. We are one of the most important ally of the United States, and we will be staying so. But to be honest, Turkish people in particular are disappointed with the attitude of Western countries, attitude of United States and European Union when the coup attempt was happening in Turkey. That was a direct attack to democracy. We may disagree about the politics and economy, but who can tolerate when innocent or unarmed people, women, men and children are being killed in the streets? We haven't seen enough support.
Harun, we're just out of time. I apologize for cutting you off. That's going to have to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Andrew Finkel, Harun Armagan, Aykan Erdemir, and Ilhan Tanir for joining us. Our executive producer is Joshua Kranzberg, and our producers this week are Jinhong Chen and Javila Raskaskate, two outstanding young journalists who sadly are leaving us to join Al Jazeera and The Voice of America in Washington, D.C. Our studio director is Travis McMillan of RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.